Welcome, everybody, to episode 4 of SMY.TV's Meet the Mets cast. Rob Render, Steve Hofstetter, and Matt Cerrone. Lots of great stuff coming up on our show as we break down all the fun things going on around the New York Mets. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the bullpen usage issues. Obviously, all the fans on Twitter, all over social media, getting on Terry Collins for how much he's utilizing the bullpen. We're going to play some fun games, try to figure out how much some of the relievers are going to get used over the next week. You folks out there can play along with us. See if you can guess the correct amount of appearances for some of the Mets relievers. Also, we're going to talk about some Mets that you might not have known were actually on the team at some point during their careers in light of the Mets right now applying or utilizing a leadoff hitter that isn't necessarily a leadoff hitter. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the leadoff hitters of the past. Again, I'm Rob Render, joined by Steve Hofstetter, stand-up comedian, Matthew Cerrone, Mets blog. A quick programming note, this show will be available as part of the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. So search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. And definitely subscribe to the feed if you haven't already. Rate us and drop us a review. All right, guys. So to get things started this week, I don't know if you folks out there have seen this. I'm sure you probably have on our post-game shows on SMY that Mets players, in order to reward the player of the game, are giving the player of the game a crown. And it started just with a crown that they would wear this crown around the clubhouse after the games. They'd have their post-game interviews wearing the crown. And now it has gone from just the crown to a robe, a blue and orange robe. Steve, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on the player of the game idea and that player being crowned, if you will.
I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. it's silliness. It's camaraderie. It's great. It's like, you know, the Twins, as terrible as they were last year, the year before they did okay because they were all dancing after games. And I think it motivates them. The season is a grind. Give people something to have fun with. I love it.
Matt, you like the addition of robe to the crown?
I think it's awesome, especially because they clearly look like Jay Bruce. The night he won it, he looked visibly sort of embarrassed, but kind of sort of proud at the same time. Like I like the sort of awkwardness of it. Like you're 31 years old, you're making $1 million, you're playing baseball, but yet I'm wearing this ridiculously goofy thing that I'm kind of proud of. Like it's an interesting little deal and I dig it. It also makes me laugh because it reminds me of, even though it's at the same crown, but it reminds me every time I see the whole getup of the Wiz from Seinfeld.
It does look like that. Yes.
I want him to have like the spire so that like they can do that dance. Like, I don't know. I think it's awesome. I like it. I like the championship belt last year. I thought that was cool. And like, I like that they're doing this year. I think it's funny.
All right. So it's kind of, it's not that unique actually to the Mets. Now, maybe the crown and the robe is unique, but the idea of giving out a player of the game award that the players are doing is a team camaraderie thing or team building thing.
It's really just the game ball. Like you can do the game ball in football. They have a game, like it's essentially just like, you know, but it's just a sillier way to do it.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, Jay Bruce winds up winning the crown for last night as we're recording this on Thursday. So he gets it for Wednesday night's performance. And Jay Bruce has been awfully good. Oh, by the way, lots
I told you.
Of fans really, you did. You said yep, it. Episode good, one. Good. A few people did say it. He's been fantastic to the tune of batting .309 this season, 6 home runs. That leads the team already. And I want to bring up a stat. Steve Gelbs tweeted this earlier today, and I thought that it was really appropriate to bring it up, because if you look at the first month of what Bruce did after he got to the Mets, he was terrible. But since that point, since September 1st of last year, which is 38 regular season games, Jay Bruce batting .282, pretty good. 12 home runs, 27 runs batted in. So it looks like it was just really a bad month. Matt, I think Jay Bruce, and I brought this up when we talked about would you trade Jay Bruce in one of our previous shows, I think he's an invaluable asset. I wouldn't get rid of him. And you look at the consistency now, I wonder if you've changed your tune.
Well, I don't think it's in a vacuum, so you know, if he's hitting well and they're winning and it's clicking and the offense is going well, like don't disrupt it. I'd rather just Granderson go to the bench and, you know, if Conforto's hitting and go. And it's, yeah. I think it's literally that simple. You know, look, if you can improve the team by trading Bruce or trading someone to bring in something that they need, then obviously you explore it. But like, if they're winning and they're playing well and everything's going good and they're smiling and everyone's having a good time, then like, don't mess with it. And in that sense, yeah, I guess I would change my tune, only because I didn't think he would be doing this. Yeah. And I didn't think Granderson would be struggling as much either. So like, in concert with one another, yeah, obviously you go here.
Now, Steve, one thing we also have noticed with Jay Bruce performing, not just tail end of last year, but the beginning of this year, is that all those fans that were haters of Jay Bruce starting to come around a little bit. He even got a curtain call when he hit his 3-run home run last night. Now, granted, there weren't that many people in the stands, but still a little mini curtain call. Fans are starting to come around on Jay Bruce. I think that this kind of ranks up there with some of the other things that we've seen in the past where players come over, perform poorly in their first little while with the team. Then they get a little comfortable, start hitting. I want to go over some of the other ones in the past with you. Carlos Beltran, 2006. Grandy in 2015 after Jason Bay was terrible. Tom Glavin from 2006 as well after he got off to a terrible start as a Met. So there's lots of examples in the past. Where does this kind of fit in that group for you? Do you think the fans are going to come around to the point where they really embrace Jay Bruce now fully?
Well, I like the little drapery call they gave him. It's not quite the curtain call yet.
Nice, yeah.
A tapestry call, maybe. It's, you know, I think that they are starting to embrace him. It'll take a little while. It's part of when Cespedes first came to the team and he was so hot right away, and there was the question about, you know, contract and extension. I tweeted at him and I was like, it is so rare for Mets fans to embrace players immediately. Like, don't let this go. Like, you don't understand what's happening right now. It's magic. Because even with Piazza when he first came over to the team. So I don't know where this ranks in terms of that quite yet, because we haven't seen it play out. But it's very hard for a Met to be embraced immediately when they come to a team. But that said, it is also very easy for them to turn that around. All they have to do is play well for a significant amount of time, which, you know, you hope they do. That's why we get them.
Is it fair to say Mets fans, you know, I wanted to say Mets fans can be a little, you know, jerky at times, right? They could be jerks to guys. You want to give them a chance.
Wait. Yeah, let's not just say that. I think that's true with just about any team's fans. But the difference is that let's blame us. Let's blame the press in that, you know, a player comes over and is, you know, an oafer in their first two games, which is just two games. And they'll just be like, they're never going to hit again. Guys, it's terrible. Everybody start crying.
It's just fans.
I don't see it that way. To me, my interpretation of that is it's just, I think, our expectations. Like, I don't think, I think that might be just an East Coast or North, you know, whatever you want, however you want to label
it's
it, whatever
York
the
thing.
Reason. Yeah, New York. Like, I think there's an expectation of excellence. I think the Yankees, to an extent, through the 90s and the 2000s, kind of ruined it for everybody by setting this ridiculous expectation of what a baseball season should be, because that's totally unrealistic. But I just think there's expectations that, you know, we expect guys to, you're going to get paid this money. You're going to come and play in front of these fans. You're going to basically necessitate us paying the prices we have to pay. You know, we expect you to work hard and do your job, you know? And
but
so
Matt,
when guys
are
don't
we,
do that, I think I think there's an under deliver on that. Obviously, that gets warranted or gets returned with boos. But ultimately, and I think you see this with Bruce, and this is what I love, because I love the story of a season. He's a redemption story. And I think more than anything, you see with New York fans that when a guy can pick himself up from, you know, the bootstraps, so to speak, and kind of get it back in gear and then be that guy you expected and fight through and take the beatings and come back and do it, then they love him. It's even more so. And I feel like he's, you know, look, it's only a couple weeks, but like, he's on that path, and that's awesome. Good for him.
But well, Steve, also, are we too quick to judge these guys?
I think often that's the case. By the way, just statistically, let me just point out, I know it's early in the season, but Bruce right now has the third highest average on the team behind Rivera and Syndergaard. But it's also interesting to look at the guys who are actually producing the most right now are Bruce, Conforto, and Darnot, guys that we kind of wrote off last year.
Mm-hmm. Right. Fair enough. All right, guys.
Also, before we move on from the robe, I just think, because it's something we probably should track throughout the course of the season, I think it's important to note that Bruce and Darno are tied for having won it twice, the crown and the robe. Syndergaard, Wheeler, Cespedes, Cabrera have all won it once. So, like, we should probably keep track of that through the course of the year. It'd be kind of funny to see, you know, ultimately who comes out with, you know, winning the crown the most times.
Well, yeah. What they should do is on the lockers, just like they do on football helmets, Yes. They should put, Yes. Like, a little crown on the lockers so you count up the amount that the guy has won throughout the year. I love that idea.
We should spread that around. We should tell people in the clubhouse that and see if we can spread that around. That's a great idea.
Oh, thank you.
But that said, it's not. I know we got to move on. But that said, I think it was when Wheeler won it. I thought that was Conforto's to win. So there, you know, I think that there might be some debate about the crown as well.
Well, that's why they should give out half crowns. For each. All right, guys. So from the bats to the bullpen. There has been talk about Terry Collins' overusage of his bullpen arms for years, since Terry was here and probably even before that when he was coaching in Houston and coaching with the Angels, but especially with the Mets. He obviously loves to use these guys, and you look at the pace that some of these relievers are on for this season, how many games they would be in if they stuck at their current pace, a couple of them over 100 games, specifically Jerry Blevins would be over 100. He's on a current pace for that. Addison Reed, the same thing. So we're going to play a little game. And again, you folks at home, if you want to play along with us, more than welcome to. And then you can tweet us later on. Let us know if you got the number a little bit closer than we do. The Mets are going to play 6 games between when we're recording this podcast today on Thursday and next Thursday when we record our next episode. So we're going to try to figure out the amount of appearances, take a guess on the amount of appearances for each member of the current Mets bullpen between now and 7 days from now, which is a span, again, of 6 games. All right, so we'll start with Jerry Blevins, who has appeared in 10 games already this season. Yeah, the Mets only have played 15. He's been in 10 of them, which is incredible. So on pace to throw over 100 games. Steve, we'll start with you. Appearances for Jerry Blevins the next 6 games. How many?
3 of the 6.
3 of the 6. Matt?
I'll go 3 also.
3. Wow, you guys are low. With
Familia back, it's going to, you know.
Familia's
last week could be totally different, right?
Familia's coming back, and also Blevins' arm is going to fall off if they keep pitching him. So
yeah, I just don't know that Terry Collins cares.
Yeah, the other caveat is if Terry is thrown out of a game, that obviously throws all this off because he is clearly addicted to using as many relievers per game as he possibly can.
This is true. We don't know how the bench coaches would operate if he's gone. I'll say Jerry Blevins is going to appear in 4 games. So I'm going to go 1 above you guys, 4 of the 6 between now and then. All right. Number 2 on the list, Josh Edgen. And fortunately for Josh, he's not very good. So he hasn't been in nearly as many games as the rest of the crew. As a matter of fact, as of today, he's been in 5, which is the bottom of the list of guys who started the season with the team. So we'll start with you again, Steve. Appearances for Josh Edgen the next 6 games. How many?
Now the Familia's back. Everybody gets bumped down one rung. I'd say Edgen is going to be in 1.
1. Okay, Matt.
I'll go the same, and here's why. Because for that reason, and also for whatever reason, I don't know, but like he just can't seem to pitch more than, you know, once a week or once every 3 or 4 days. Like I don't even think it's Terry. Like it just seems like it's Edgen. I'll go 2. Let's just change it up.
2. Okay. I'm going to say 1 as well. I just don't think he's reliable. He's kind of like last man on the totem pole or pretty close to it and not very good. ERA right now is ballooning. So, all right. From Josh Edgen to Rafael Montero next. Matt, we'll
0.
Start with you
this Please
time.
0. Please be 0.
He could be the guy that actually winds up going down now that Familia is going to be activated. Yeah. Never know.
I think Montero is going to appear in 2 games and they're going to be in Las Vegas.
There you go.
Fair enough. Brutal. All right, Matt, how many?
Yeah, 0. -2.
0. You're saying negative. Okay, so both of you say 0. Ooh, Montero between now. All right, if he does not go down today, I'm going to say he appears in 1 game. He'll definitely see 1 game because there'll be a blowout one way or the other, and they'll just throw him in 1 because, you know, why not? And by the way, he is brutal to watch. Oh, he walks the house.
He's a batting practice pitcher all of a sudden.
I actually don't think the 8 walks are the problem. I'm going to go with the 16 hits and say that those are the problem.
Well, because if he's not walking, it's a meatball over the plate. That's the problem.
Yes, those straight as an arrow fastballs at 93 don't seem to work in the big leagues.
Hey, guys, one of the eight runs he's already given up was unearned. So let's not blame everything on him.
Okay.
It's all the defense. Let's go Addison Reed next, who, again, was the closer. And now, because, as you said, Familia is being activated today, he'll be bumped down to the setup man. Appearances, Steve, for Addison Reed the next six games.
I am going to say three on him also, because I think that they are – I think they're only going to use him in the high leverage situation, give him a little bit of rest.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. You know what? I'm going to go four and say the Mets win four games, and Terry just cannot help himself.
One of those four wins is going to be by more than four or five runs. Yeah, so.
That's true.
The Mets are playing the Nationals this weekend. That'll be a tough matchup. So you may not see a whole lot of closing opportunity. Who knows?
What I'm getting at is that I don't think Terry can contain himself from using the Reed-Familia combination, even if it is completely inappropriate. I just think finally he's got a shot. He's just going to do it because he's what Terry does.
Completely addicted to him, and I'm with you guys. I'm going to go three on Addison Reed as well. Hansel Robles is tied with Jerry Blevins for the most appearances as of today. He has 10. So, again, another guy on pace to throw over 100 times this season, appearing over 100 games. It is nuts. All right, Matt, your turn first. Hansel Robles appearances.
I think he's getting rest. I would say one or two. I think they're going to knock. I think he gets knocked down because, he needs it.
Well, what is it, one or two? You got to
pick. We'll go two.
Don't forget, Jeff's adding this up. Our producer, Jeff Goldman's adding these numbers up. So,
perfect.
Are you going two? All right, Steve, go ahead.
I'm going three.
Three for Hansel. All right, for me, I'm with Matt on this one. I think I'm going to go two. I think Robles does get a little bit more rest here. I'm probably giving Terry way too much of the benefit of the doubt here. He's probably going to use Hansel four or five times. All right, Fernando Salas, who I believe at one point was in eight of the first 11 games, but has gotten some rest the last few, which means he's probably due to appear in a few more here the next week. Steve, guesses on Fernando Salas.
Another three.
Three. Okay, Matt.
I'll go two on him also.
Two on Fernando. I'm going to say four. Terry Collins loves Fernando Salas.
He does.
And he's a free agent after the year. I don't think he minds if he blows out. He could care less. I'm going to say four on Fernando.
There is no way Terry Collins knows he's a free agent at the end of this year.
That's probably right. I know I'm giving him too much of the benefit of the doubt there. Okay, Josh Smoker is next. And coming into today, Smoker has been in seven of the 15 games. Matt, guesses on Smoker.
Yeah, he's low. I'm going to go with two on him also. I'm going light because I think he's going to go heavy on Familia and probably push the pitchers a little bit, the starting pitchers.
Okay, Steve?
I'm going with two also. And by the way, none of us are going light. You add all these up, and that's like, that's like three, four relievers a game.
Which is about right.
All right, what was the number again? What did you say? You said two?
I said two.
You did, okay. So for me on Smoker, boy, he's been pretty bad as well. Not too bad. I take it back, actually. 2.45 ERA. He's been okay. You're right. I'm wrong about that. What am I thinking? 11 strikeouts.
11 strikeouts and seven innings. He's been solid.
No, Smoker's been good. I apologize. I'm thinking of Edgen.
I think you're thinking of Josh Edgen again.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. I was thinking of Edgen the whole time. Okay, so Smoker, I'll say he'll get in three just to be a little different. All right, so Jerry's Familia. Here's the big one. Familia is coming back. First game of the season for him, or at least the one where he'll be activated, will be tonight on Thursday. So six games. How many of his first potential 6 days on the field will he appear in a game? Steve.
Four.
Okay, Matt.
Or because I think he's going to put him in right away to test him, and then I think he's going to be in three potential save situations.
Okay,
and I'm going to go five, just for the humor in it. But also because I think he's going to use him initially like as the setup guy, and then he's going to want to throw him back to back games and test him out, and then there's going to be some sort of an extra inning thing or something's going to happen, and then there'll be a legit save. That I just think he's going to be out there all the time.
Well, but guys, I think a lot of this is dependent on whether or not Noah Syndergaard loses a finger.
True.
Noah Syndergaard's ERA is below one. If he was lasting seven, eight innings instead of five or six because of his various, you know, Lee Press on Nails ailments.
Yes. I cannot wait to see how this goes for him, by the way. And I hope, listen, this isn't on our rundown, but like, I'm really hoping when he takes the field tonight that he's got him like painted blue and orange or something. Like, why not? If you're going to wear, you know, Lee Press on Nails, like acrylic nails, dress him up. Go for it.
There you go. Fine. from Press on Nails to Jerry's Familia appearances for me, I am going to guess 3. I don't think they're going to try to blow him out the first week. I think they'll go a little easy. So I'll say he'll get into 3. Plus, as I said earlier, they're playing the Nationals this weekend. So you hope there are save opportunities, but they're really good, the Nationals are. So who knows?
How crazy is it, by the way, that like DeGrom, Harvey, and Syndergaard all pitching lights out? Like, they're all pitching great. And none of them, like, they're averaging about 6 innings apiece.
Yeah, well, and which is why I love what they did with Gesellman last night, bringing him out to at least start the 8th inning. Didn't get through it, but he started the 8th. Okay, so we promised this at the start of the show. Have to get to it. We've noticed that the Mets obviously don't have what you call a prototypical leadoff hitter, a guy who has a lot of speed, hits at the top of the lineup. And now all around baseball, they're sort of getting away from that. We've seen Kyle Schwarber as a leadoff hitter for the Cubs occasionally this year. So teams in general are getting away from using just the speed guy, the Vince Coleman type at the front of their lineup. But the Mets still don't really have a guy that you'd say is a prototypical leadoff hitter really on the roster, a guy that gets on base a ton like a Dexter Fowler. So with that said, they've been using Michael Conforto as a leadoff hitter, at least they did a couple of days ago. Curtis Granderson has been the primary guy at that spot. And that got us to thinking, there's some leadoff hitters from the past that, especially for the younger listeners, might not have even known were members of the team. Great players or even good players in their own right that were members of the Mets that, especially like I said, those younger folks might not even know were part of the Mets. Brett Butler and Ricky Henderson came to mind for our production team, and those are two great picks. You might not know this. Brett Butler, who was an excellent big leaguer. I mean, he played in the big leagues for 17 years. He was an all-star at times. In fact, once in his career, he was an all-star in 91 with the Dodgers, was an MVP candidate a few times, made the top 25 in MVP voting. He was a Met. You might not have known that. He was only a Met for 90 games in 1995. He got 418 plate appearances. He hit 311. And then he got shipped out. He went back to the Dodgers where he was the previous 5 seasons. I think this is awesome because Brett Butler was a nice player who was leading off for the Mets at one point. Who knew? Steve, did you know? You're my age, so I think you probably did know. Brett Butler was a Met.
I did, but my most I completely forgot he was a Met is Oral Hershiser.
Yes, like, 1999 Oral
Hershiser. Yeah. Yeah, just which I mean he pitched for us and we needed and during a playoff year and it was important, but like it's one of those things where I just think of him so much as a rival that I'm just like, yeah. Oh yeah, he was ours too. Yeah.
I know the two things with Hershiser is that it was so difficult to root for him. Like I just when he joined them, like I still identified him as a Dodger the way you're saying, and that was like such a hard pill to swallow given what he did in 88. And then also he played such an integral role in the Bobby Valentine glasses, you know, fake mustache story that like yes. Those two things have sort of for me ironed out that he was a Met. Like I can deal with
that. That's right. I forgot about yeah. That yeah,
he killed the Mets by the way in the 88.
To get back
playoffs.
To Butler, like the cool thing about Butler is you said he was the I mean has anybody been more of a prototypical, you know, small ball kind of leadoff hitter. So it was kind of cool to watch that for a little bit. Like I do distinctly remember, you know, those few months or whatever, but like, yeah, it was a blink of an eye.
Do you have any idea how long it took me to distinguish between Brett Butler, the ball player, and Brett Butler, the female comedian?
Yeah, I bet for you, I'm sure that was tricky.
It was because every time someone would be like, yeah, Brett Butler, I'd be like, yeah, yeah, played for the Dodgers. And they'd be like, no, like she's on the show tonight. I'm like, oh, right.
Oh, by the way, he played for several teams, as did this Met, played for several teams. And really, you could play a couple of different games revolving around Ricky Henderson. I, Rob Brender, remember that Ricky Henderson was a member of the Mets in 1999 as well and 2000 as well. And that's a guy, I mean, you think of Ricky Henderson, you think Yankees, and you think Oakland A's for the most part. Did you know Ricky Henderson was with, I mean, not just the Mets. We're talking about how many teams here? Let's see. I'm trying to add them up. Oakland, New York, San Diego, the Mets, Boston, Dodgers, Angels, Seattle, Toronto in his career. But for a year and a half, He was with the 99 team that made the postseason, actually had an excellent postseason, if you remember, especially in the division series against the Diamondbacks. He was great. And then in 2000, he winds up getting released, I want to say midway through the season. But yeah, so he didn't get to play on the World Series team. But Matt, I remember Ricky as a Matt. I don't know that many young kids probably do.
Yeah, and they're really ripping themselves off of a tremendous. I mean, it was such an eventful 152 games. Like if you think about it, between you know what he did, how he did it, I can't remember what the story is, but I know like basically I think that's the where the Ricky doesn't do signs story comes from, where he basically told Bobby V, like they were trying to go over the signs with him. He's like, I don't do signs. Like Ricky does Ricky, you know.
Ricky,
From that first moment to like the card game with Bonilla and then coming back and then getting like the playoffs. I mean, in a span of 152 games, like that's a hell of a, you know, that's a nice span of events to go down. Like his tenure with the Mets was fantastic. And I love Ricky. I think he's like my favorite I guess he was a Met, but like, you know, up until that point, my favorite non-Met, like the batting gloves and the whole thing. Like, I love Ricky. He was awesome.
So I have an amazing Ricky Henderson story, not from when he was on the Mets, but from when he was on the Padres. And I have this firsthand from people who were on that team bus when it happened. So Henderson is boarding a team bus, and he's the last one on the bus. And so there's one player per row at that point, and Henderson wants his own row. And so he stands there, and like he always does, he speaks in third person. And he stands there at the front of the bus, and he's like, Ricky ain't got no seat, and nobody got a seat for Ricky. Nobody got a seat for Ricky. And finally, one of the players is like, just tell one of the rookies to move. Ricky, you got tenure. Just tell one of the kids to move. And Henderson goes, tenure? Ricky got 15 year.
Yes.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's
So that's a third person, by the way. I was trying my best at the top of this to do my third person Rob Brender. I was trying to mimic Ricky. It didn't work. But that was a good one. Yes, that's
it's hard to speak in third person. It's actually, like, difficult to do it, even if you try to do it on purpose.
Yeah, that's a legitimate challenge. But Ricky did it all the time, right? That was his thing. I am the greatest of all time.
He's been so quiet, too. Like, where is he? What is he? Who doesn't want to hear from Ricky Henderson? Or maybe I'm alone. Maybe I'm the only one. But like,
I just saw him recently.
He's doing more stuff.
They dedicated the field at O.Co. Coliseum, which is in Oakland, to Ricky Henderson. Right. So they named the field that. So he was there. Whatever day one was of their opening day. I don't know if they started the season on at home or on the road. But anyway, so he was there for that. I don't know what he does otherwise though. What would Ricky Henderson do post playing career? He's not coaching, so I don't know what he's doing.
Whatever he does, he'll tell us he's the greatest at it.
He is the best at it, hands down. Exactly. So the Mets leadoff situation is a weird one, to say the least. And Ricky Henderson was kind of a part of that, you know, tenure in the past. And Brett Butler was too. And again, for those folks that don't remember those guys, they were excellent baseball players and members of the Mets, which is really, really weird. All right.
Another person that I forget is a Met, by the way, is Gary Sheffield. But continue.
No, he was a good member of the Mets, too.
Still only for like 100 games.
Was it only 100 games? I thought it was more than that. You might be right.
Maybe 110, 130. It was less than a season.
Yeah. So once again, folks, you can find us on SMY.TV's Mets podcast feed. Search SMY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. Well, guys, that'll do it for this episode. I hope all of our numbers that we added up for our bullpen usage are accurate. I hope I win, so I'm a little more accurate maybe than you two guys. But otherwise, let's hope Terry Collins doesn't blow everybody out before the season is done, because we'll need them for the postseason, I hope. Steve, anything big coming up this week?
Just more touring. I was at the Cubs game yesterday where they won in the ninth inning on a walk-off, which was crazy. And I'm doing...
Did I see you had the Cubs championship ring on your finger?
No, even have any ring on my finger.
Okay. I don't know if it was Instagram. Must have been somebody else. Good, 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 good.
Okay, so you have tour dates in Illinois coming up.
Well, no, I just did Chicago. I'm doing Indianapolis, Louisville, D.C., and Philly. So come on out, folks.
Very cool. Matt, Q&A cast stuff coming up, I'm guessing?
Yeah, standard fare, Mets blog. We did the Q&A. I started, finally got it back going earlier this week. Talked to Rich Catino and our buddy Brian Ernie a little bit. And then tomorrow I'm going to do voicemails with Mark Healy and just kind of pedal through some Q&A stuff. And then, just keep rocking with it. It's I think all this audio stuff is great. I hope people are subscribing.
All right, me too. All right, that'll about do it for us for this week. For Steve and Matt, I'm Rob. We'll see you next week.